Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here is Mordecai Breenberg.
Last month, BC's controversial Safe Streets Act went into effect, and under the act, solicitors, including Girl Guides peddling cookies, veterans selling poppies, and panhandlers asking for quarters, could all be fined for conducting these activities in certain areas. Michael Vaughan is the policy director of the BC Civil Liberties Union, and she's joined me to talk about the Safe Streets Act and about the impact it will have on those most likely to be targeted, the homeless and the poor. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Let's get a list first of the kind of activities that are prohibited under the Safe Streets Act.
Well, I'd probably classify it into three major areas. One, there's the so-called aggressive panhandling provisions. Two, there's this notion of the language that they use is the captive audience notion. So it's kind of no solicitation zones in places where the audience is quote-unquote captive, and that includes things like bank machines, public toilets, bus stops, parking lots, those kinds of areas. And then thirdly, there's the squeegeeing provisions. So those are the three basic categories.
Are all these captive places identified, sort of this?
Yeah, they are. They're spelled out.
Okay. So how wide an area could that affect, let's say? Could it affect an entire city block area where panhandling would be prohibited?
Well, you know, it gets awfully interesting, and I wish somebody would do a little bit of a study on this, because it is a certain number of meters, and I don't have the legislation right in front of me, but I think that's a salient point. No one is going to have the legislation right in front of them. We know that there's this notion of the zone where there's no solicitation, and on a kind of a busy city street where you have a number of these possible no-go zones, as it were, you could find yourself, if you were a private security guard, for example, with seeming justification to just sweep the street. And so, yeah, we think that that's a possibility.
What are the penalties?
Well, it was quite interesting, actually. The government took their time coming up with penalties, because I think that they knew that the penalty provisions were going to ultimately be quite absurd. The notion of fining panhandlers is just inherently funny. It is problematic. There's no way around it. And so they did end up putting these provisions under the Offense Act so that the penalties were, in fact, fines. There is, of course, in any situation where you're dealing with unpaid fines, there's always the potential to push that to the point where you could end up jailing someone. It is at least theoretically possible.
So effectively, even though the government denies that this is under any criminal legislation, the penalties are those that are under the criminal code.
Well, they could certainly result in that. And I think it's really important that we I've certainly had arguments with people who have maintained that this is a kinder, gentler way to deal with aggression on public streets. One, of course, we need to point out that some of these provisions have nothing to do with aggression whatsoever. And two, the notion that this is sort of an intermediate step whereby we don't end up criminalizing people is virtually cosmetic. The police have always had lots of intermediate steps, quote unquote. For one, they can issue a warning. I don't think the notion this is a tool that we really need in order to prevent criminalization is an argument that flies at all.
Now, they use the word safe in the legislation, and of course that's a word that has many meanings. So what sort of safety are they trying to create, for whom and against what dangers?
Oh, well, don't you get me speaking for the government here, because I don't know what they were on about. But I will tell you what I've learned in doing the kind of work that I have in advocating against this legislation. And, it is interesting to me, because the people that I've had on, say, call-in shows, for example, There are people who are afraid of street people, literally afraid. It is completely irrational, but it tells me something about what has happened in terms of the demonization of the poor. The notion that I've heard this legislation sold on, in that, you know, well, you know, women who are frail and the elderly have clearly cause to be afraid of poor people. Just I'm mortified by that justification being used by people who clearly just want to see this, to see some street sweeping happen for, you know, cosmetic reasons, basically, because it's good for business. And they use that rationale. That said, there are people who I have heard who are genuinely afraid, not for legitimate reasons, but because they say things like, well, you don't know, those people are desperate, they could do anything. And I think it's just tragic that there's been this exploitation of the notion of safety to implement this kind of legislation, which is completely driven by the business lobby.
Well, fear, however genuinely it might be experienced, is not an excuse for persecuting people who objectively are not providing a threat.
Well, exactly. And we, you know, we have said that this notion of the provisions that trouble us the most are clearly this I'm going to call it a no-go zone, because I think the captive audience language is a little Orwellian, quite frankly. Nobody is bound and gagged in this, right? this no-go zone is problematic. One, you know, there's no question that you have a charter-protected right in terms of your freedom of expression to ask for assistance on a public street. Not even a question. The problematic notion is all of our freedoms are subject to reasonable limitations. That's a surprise to a lot of people, that that's kind of how we adjudicate these things. And the analogy that has been made has been to the notion of, you know, well, we're allowed to restrict how people advertise. We're allowed to restrict commerce to certain times, place, and manner kind of notion. As if, you know, asking for help for food to eat is the same as a business.
Mm-hmm.
It's commerce, they say. It's analogous to commerce. I think that analogy is just so completely lacking in humanity that it cannot stand. The notion that, you know, we should be able to tell you when it's okay to ask for a quarter so you can compile enough money for a muffin that morning, like we can tell you how big your billboard can be, It's just an analogy that mortifies me.
And that's the analysis of poverty and panhandling that's really underpins this act.
I think, you know, you do actually hear people say, and, you know, here's the language they use. You'll hear them say, if people choose to make their living that way. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about what the analysis is there.
Right. With regards to actual aggression, mm-hmm. there are already, are there not, laws that protect people from aggressive behavior of others?
Well, you know, I rattled them off in an op-ed that I did, and I can't remember them offhand, but I sat down with the criminal code and I looked it up. There's intimidation, there's harassment, there's, you know, verbal assault, there's all manner of criminal code offenses against intimidating people, absolutely. The question is, if this is really about aggression, which is, of course, you know, how it's being sold, what is wrong with those provisions? What is not happening? And I have yet to have a satisfactory answer to that question, which makes me think that there's nothing wrong with those provisions, that this legislation is really about something else.
We meet this pattern again and again with the so-called anti-terrorism legislation. You create fear and use the fear as a justification for restricting all kinds of rights, whereas the crime supposedly being protected against has ample provision in the existing codes.
I think that's very fair to say.
Who is behind this act? You mentioned the business associations.
Maybe well, we can... certainly they've been their lobbying efforts, have been extensive, and it's not expressing any sense of conspiracy to say clearly this was driven by the business lobby. I think that's bold enough to state. The way that this bill moved is sort of interesting. It was initially introduced as a private member's bill by Lauren Maincourt. And it was sort of reinvented as a government bill a little later on. Now, even as a private member's bill, the BC Civil Liberties Association started writing letters to the government expressing our concerns about the bill. And one of the concerns we had is how quickly that private member's bill was moving. Because anybody who kind of watches these things know that the way that government works is private member's bill kinds of languish. Collect dust in the back rung that's how government sort of marginalizes those kinds of bills. This one was flying like grease lightning, and we thought, okay, look, something's going on here. This is a front for something the government really wants to do. And the government, indeed, introduced its own bill, slightly modified, and in no time at all passed it. So the government was, interested in the bill even when it was presented as a private member's motion, and there's no question that the business lobby was they made a provincial junket looking for support and making presentations in lieu of it.
Get to the question of enforcement. How do you think this is going to be enforced?
Well, it's very important, I think, that people only have the foggiest notion of what any bylaw says. Who gets to enforce these things? People who say that they're authorities. Our suspicion is that private security is going to be telling people what the law is, whether they're right or wrong, and using it to sweep the streets. That's the way it's going to work. That's not the way it's meant to work. But in practice, what you have to have is a tremendous amount of knowledge, not to mention moxie, to stand up and say, I believe I have a right to be here, when you know it's going to get you in trouble with some kind of authority or make you have a confrontation with them. So we think that it will largely be used on a kind of a catch-all. You need to get out of here because of the Safe Streets Act.
Is that where the civil liberties or other individuals could bring something to court and challenge the interpretation of the bylaw, or is that a very difficult thing in law?
Oh, well, certainly these kinds of provisions are I would say, ripe for challenge. They just are. They're controversial in terms of, they're a clear abrogation of rights. And, the onus is on the government to justify why it is that they do that. So I think that that's fair to say. There's two aspects of this. One is the law on its face, i.e. what it does, in terms of the actual words on the page. The other one is how it actually manifests in practice. And that also could be a separate aspect of a challenge.
Well, thank you very much for giving us a quick overview and insight into the legislation. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, you're welcome.
I've been speaking with Michael Vaughan of the BC Civil Liberties Association.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.